What's going on, Just Goes to Show listeners? It is your co-host, Ridge. We're back with another episode.
We are back. Yes, we are, Jack. And missed a week. You were traveling, but a lot of footy to catch up on, and we're finally into that run-in here where we're going to be making, but finding out what's going to happen at the end of the season here. A lot of races that are coming down to the wire.
We decide what happens in the Premier League table.
We decide what we think is going to happen in the Premier League table here, which we do all season, but now it gets down to the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah, I was on the West Coast last week, spent some time in Southern California. Shout out Brentford B fan, Gage Mankowski. But I had definitely from that week like a newfound respect for any Premier League fans on Mountain Time or Pacific Standard Time. Like, it is way more of a commitment to watch those games, and it's much earlier, like every weekend. Like, on the East Coast, it's pretty nice. Like, you know, you're gonna have games. We were talking about the slate the other week, Chris. Like, it's, you got all the 10 a.m.s, you kind of coast into your day. Like, it's not, you know, you can watch the games and have lunch. This is like proper, like the sun's not up yet and games are on. And for fantasy purposes.
Well, even like the early kickoff, the 7:30, I don't have a problem with getting up 4 here on a Saturday, but 4:30 would be a big test. Yeah. And then like on Sunday, they're normally, you know, 9 o'clock kickoffs, which is really nice, but 6 o'clock West Coast is a big ask. So yeah, it's a big difference. We're in a really good spot here. And, you know, being an American Premier League fan and a fan of a lot of other sports too, like during football season, there's no real conflict with those times or college football. So we're kind of in the perfect spot here, East Coast and Central Time, big advantage.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's so true. I know my sister right now is sitting there, she's like driving to work, and she's like, thank you. Like, you feel, you understand, and I get some recognition. So, Marth, we see you. But this week on the pod, we're going to be covering really what's to play for in terms of the last two game weeks of the season. So there's some spots at the top end of the table for Champions League places. Obviously, the title still up for grabs. There's a bunch of teams in the middle of the table who we've talked about, but can either finish 9th or 11th, right? And so don't necessarily have much to play for here at the tail end of the season. And then at the bottom of the table, we'll take a look at the relegation race as well. We'll also take a look at, we've got some newly promoted teams that we know are coming up, and then take a look at some of the managerial implications, because as some of these final games can sort out teams' fates, managers' fates will go with that. So we'll take a look at some of those manager names. I've got trivia to deliver to Chris this week. And, of course, we'll chat about the fixtures of some coming weekend.
Sounds good.
All right, let's get into it, Chris. So I guess let's start right at the top. We've got 3 games left for City and 2 games left for Arsenal, right? Arsenal are a point up, but with stronger goal difference, right? So goal difference, if there's a draw from the way you look at it, like, could come into play. But like, how do you assess 3 games left for City, 2 games left to Arsenal? Set the table for us.
Yeah, well, I just, before we talk about those two teams, I just want to confirm, because Liverpool's been your pick for about 4 months now. Can we say that they're out?
Yeah, I'm honestly shocked. They're out. But I'm shocked that Jurgen, they collapsed. And I guess I've done this like time and time again the past few years. I found myself thinking about this like 2 weeks ago. Like, I like buy into the Liverpool narrative, like the whole like you'll never walk alone, Klopp leaving. I thought it was just going to be too, like, I soaked it up. I bought it. I was like, yeah, if he's gone, his players are going to want to play for him, and then they fail. And that's kind of happened a bunch of times. Like, the beginning of last season, they started off the season really, really poorly. People forget that. And everyone thought that, you know, they were going to have a really strong year after reloading, and they didn't. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm disappointed. Not, I don't want to say disappointed, because I really don't care. No offense, Liverpool fans. But, yeah, they're out.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so. And them kind of falling apart in the Europa League, too, was surprising. They put out strong teams. And
it felt weird.
In the quarters.
Felt weird.
Yeah. Okay, but just to kind of assess where we're at. So Arsenal, 83 points. You're right. They have the goal differential advantage. They play United away, Everton at home. United really, really struggling as of late. Just lost 4-0 to Palace in their last match. They look pretty lost. Everton have been better. They've had a strong end to the season where, you know, probably a month ago we were talking about them as outside chance of relegation. They won four of their last five or six matches, I believe. So that's not a gimme for them in the final day, although they do get that one at home. City, we have them 1 point behind, 82 points. Fulham away, Spurs away, West Ham home. They're going to be big favorites in all of those. And City definitely have the pedigree where they haven't, you know, stumbled or thrown away any of these run-ins in the past 6-7 years under Pep. They seem to show up when they need to in these types of matches. So I guess a question for you, Jack, out of those five fixtures between the two teams, do you see any of those? Do you see five wins there? Do you think there's one that is like a likely slip up for either side?
Yeah. So West Ham's going to be a win for City for sure at home. Arsenal are definitely. Yeah. Arsenal's going to beat Manchester United. I think Arsenal win their next two games.
I do too.
And then, so I think, I think this two City games, the more I look at it, the more I think that both teams are just going to win out, and that's just going to be it. In all honesty, I think that City, of course, they have an extra game, and they've two of their fixtures are away, so it's tougher. But I can easily see both teams taking maximum points from all those fixtures.
I think that's the expectation. I think Fulham away and Spurs away, I agree. Those are two matches that I definitely expect City to win, but I could see something happening. Spurs have just not been very good as of late, but they might still be playing for something on that match, depending on how their weekend goes. I guess, so the interesting thing here is if Arsenal win both, they finish on 89 points. If City win two out of the three and draw the other one, that's where we get into a spot where they're level on points. And Arsenal should have the goal differential advantage. They're up six right now, unless City win one of these by a ton. You'd think that Arsenal are going to finish with a higher goal differential. So really all it takes is City to draw one of these three matches. A loss, you know, doesn't need to happen necessarily for them to lose their chance. So despite us probably thinking that these are all wins, you know, that's not always the way the cookie crumbles. So we very much have a race still. I think City are certainly the favorites because I don't expect a slip up, but crazier things have definitely happened. And then, you know, if it happens in the Fulham or Spurs match, they get a draw, it's all going to come down to the final day, which I think is probably what we're both hoping for, is just having that drama and the final fixtures. We're going to have to, you know, we'll pod next week and we'll have a better sense of what's going on here. That Spurs City game will be on Tuesday of next week. So at that point, we should know whether or not we have anything to play for on the final day. And in all likelihood, we will. If Arsenal beats United, that there's going to be something on the line. And I really think that despite Arsenal having to play at Old Trafford, that's probably one of the best fixtures you could ask for right now. With the way things have been going for United, they're completely in shambles, and they have a ton of injuries too, so they're not gonna be able to put out their best side. And you know, we talked about this over the past month or so now. This is really all these teams are playing for. I mean, City are in the FA Cup final. That'll take place after the fact, so no Champions League matches. I know City have that extra midweek match, but really these guys should be rested enough where they're gonna be able to put out their best sides for all these matches and not have to worry too much about rotation risks. There's really not like any major injuries for either side either, which is nice. So we should be able to see pretty much the best side for both of these clubs in their final fixtures. And I think we both probably are going to say that we think City's going to win. I've said that for a while now. I'm going to just stick with that. But I'm kind of hopeful that there's a draw in one of those matches, just so that way there's a lot of pressure on Arsenal in that final day to get their win. And the goal differential maybe comes into play a little bit too.
Yeah, same. I'm definitely hoping that City, if City were to draw against Fulham in their next fixture, that would make, so then they'd be even on points, goal differential slightly different. That would be like the most ideal fan outcome as a neutral.
100%. Are we good to move on to the relegation stuff here?
Yeah. Let's jump to the bottom of the table. I guess I'll set the table here. We've got three teams that are sort of competing for two spots of relegation because Blades are already down. So you've got Burnley, Luton, and Nottingham Forest from bottom to top there. Burnley are on 24 points with a negative 35 goal differential. Luton 26 points on negative 26 goal differential. And Forest are on 29 points with minus 18 goal differential. So Forest sitting 3 points above Luton with, you know, an 8 better goal differential. So definitely in the driving seat, and Luton and Burnley are definitely trying to play catch up. But Burnley have 2 games left. They play at Spurs, who have been struggling lately, and then they play Forest, in, like we talked about last 2 weeks ago on the pod, in the last game week of the season at home. Luton play away at West Ham, also been in bad form, and then play at home against Fulham in the last game of the season. And Forest are at home against Chelsea this week, who have been flying, and away against Burnley, of course, in the last fixture of the season. So although Forest sit in the driver's seat from a current points and goal differential standpoint, the fixtures and the sort of trends of opposition that they're playing, right, like Chelsea are in much better form, that Forest have to play at Stamford Bridge this weekend compared to Luton, who are playing West Ham, who are, you know, conceding loads of goals as of late, and Burnley are playing Spurs, who also haven't looked very good either and are sort of playing themselves out of fourth place in the table. So I think that sort of makes it interesting. Like, although you kind of, if you were looking at it on paper, you'd think Forest are good, but the fixtures remaining make me think that Luton or Burnley could stick around. But of course, Burnley need a result in this immediate fixture. They can't just wait till the last day, whereas Luton could be still alive going into the last game week of the season.
Yeah, technically it could be. So I think the nice thing about the relegation battle right now is it's very clear what Luton and Burnley need to do to have a chance, basically. So the goal differential is significant enough that Forest should finish with the best goal differential, unless Cole Palmer gets like 7 goals against them.
Yeah, see, that's and that's the thing. Like, Chelsea just walloped West Ham, so like Chelsea could easily pump Forest 5-0, right? And then all of a sudden they're at minus 23 goal differential, and then Luton, you know, if Luton get a win against West Ham, who again just got pumped 5-0, like all of a sudden goal differential. I don't think the goal differential is like out of reach.
It's not technically out of reach, but I would be surprised. So, like, let's just assume that it is.
Okay.
Luton 3 points back with, let's say it's an insurmountable goal differential, because it would kind of take a miracle there. They need at least a win and a draw against West Ham and Fulham. They need 4 points, get up to the 30-point mark, and then hope Forest lose their last two. Burnley, regardless of goal differential, need 2 wins. If they lose to Spurs, they're down. So, if they draw Spurs, they're down. They need to get 6 points. There's no other formula for them. Forest, you'd think if they get a draw in either of those two games, they're probably okay. But Luton, you know, if Luton wins, they're 2. So Forest, you get 1 win in those last 2 matches, and you feel safe. So, you know, if all holds, obviously Forest are fine. If Luton don't win this weekend against West Ham, Forest, their result against Chelsea, they're still 3 points clear. Then they get Burnley, and Luton would have to have like a 9 goal win, or, you know, like a 4 or 5 goal win, and Burnley would have to thrash Forest. So the odds are certainly stacked against Luton and Burnley, but definitely possible for Luton. Burnley would need to win twice and hope Forest don't get a result against Chelsea.
Yeah, funnily enough, and the wrinkle in, like, West Ham have a part to play in both ends of the table and the fixtures remaining, right? So because they play at home against City at the last game of the season, and then they also play away at Luton. Or sorry, they play
away against City.
Against
Luton. Yep.
Correct. So they have a part to play, and I do think, weirdly enough, that the announcement that they just made about David Moyes leaving in the summer does, for some reason, I feel like that means they're going to play better. I feel like that's going to help, because that's
you're falling into the Klopp trap again.
I really am. Like, what the narrative is, like, the manager's on the way out, players are going to be freed up. I can easily see it going the opposite way, and they're like, all right, fuck this guy. Like, he's not even going to be here next season. But I can also see, like, you know, a lot of the West Ham players who were in the team that won that European final, you know, playing pretty well, to say, hey, we're going to send him off the right way before he leaves West Ham. So, yeah, definitely the Klopp trap. So maybe I shouldn't, you know, let lightning strike me twice.
It's
like, I don't know,
the exact same thing, pretty much. I mean, obviously, Klopp's had a longer history at Liverpool and won a little bit more than Moyes at West Ham, but it's almost the exact same thing, where you're just saying, yeah, you know what? They announced he's gone. They're gonna want to give him a good send off. You're believing in the bubbles. And yeah.
I'm just all about the narrative.
And they've been playing like shit. They've been playing like shit for weeks now.
I'm just all about the narrative. I'm all about the dressing room narrative. You know, that's really all
I'm
about.
It's funny, too, because I think it was probably about 2 months ago or so when we were assessing the title race. We talked about what would make for the best story. And we both said that Klopp winning in his last season at Liverpool would be the best narrative out of those three teams. And you're right. You're just bought in the narrative. You're trying to get the best pod content, I guess. But yeah. but you don't give a shit about Jurgen Klopp or David Moyes, really. That's the funny part too.
No, I objectively don't like they're like objectively my least favorite managers in the Prem, probably. Can't think of anyone I dislike more than
Klopp. I don't really have a problem with David Moyes, but you know, I don't. I think it's probably best that they move on.
Yeah, I mean, bottom three, like, who are the Premier League managers who you dislike the most? Like, if they were hired as manager of, let's say, Glasner got hired for Real Madrid and had to go to Palace, who is your least favorite Premier League manager?
Arteta.
Oh, but you wouldn't like him at managing your team? Like, I don't love him. I think he's annoying, but, like, I would.
Okay, well, if we're talking about, like, you're talking about dislike versus, like, caliber.
Okay, so I'm
two different questions.
Yeah, you're right. They are two different questions. Shit. All right.
Because I think Arteta is good as a manager. Like, he's done a good job. Like, there's no doubt about that. But I don't like him. So you know, two totally different questions there. But either way, yeah. I mean, you're talking about these narratives for like you don't like West Ham or Liverpool, and you don't like either of their managers. Yet you think like you know. There's something about these stories that just I think West Ham still have a part to play here. But
well, they do. They do have a part to play. They play a bunch of these teams.
Yeah. But they absolutely have a part to play in theory. But they've lost three of their last four. They just lost 5-0 to Chelsea. They lost 5-2 to Palace. They lost 2-0 to Fulham. And they did get a 2-2 draw against Liverpool, where Liverpool was still kind of like lurking a bit, but. No, you're right. I mean, just based on the way that the fixtures line up, they're very involved. But whether or not the players care is a different question. Because they really have nothing to play for is the thing. Other than the fact that, we want to give David Moyes, who won us a Conference League title last season, a proper send-off in the last year of his contract. I mean, you'd think, like, the one thing that a lot of these teams have nothing to play for or fighting for, it's like the last couple of games of the season. You might be fighting for a new contract. You might be fighting for a spot, especially if you're getting a new manager coming in. I think it's more of I want to impress the new guy with a couple of fixtures here to kind of solidify my place in the team for next season, more so than a send off to the previous manager. Now Liverpool, I'm sure a lot of these guys have been on the squad for a long time. They probably do have a relationship with Klopp where they want him to, you know, they don't want to completely fold. In his final season, but what have they done? They've completely folded. So I think it's kind of a distraction too. Not sure it'll be a huge distraction at West Ham because this Moyes writing's been on the wall for a while. But
yeah.
Regardless, if we look at the relegation, Forest driver's seat, Luton in the mix with a win. They're very much in the mix with a win against West Ham. Burnley are very much in the mix with a win against Spurs. Like both those teams kind of have to win their next match, I think. To Luton can get away with a draw, but Burnley, you have to think like they're playing for a cup final against Spurs, and Spurs also need to win. So we could talk about that as well. The top four run in right now, we have Villa in fourth because like we mentioned, I don't think we necessarily had this as like a the last time we potted. I don't think it was official. But there are only four Champions League places now. The Bundesliga is getting that other spot. So, top four means Champions League. Fifth place means Europa. Villa on 67 points, plus 20 goal differential. Spurs on 60 points, plus 11 goal differential. The kicker is Spurs do have an extra match to play. So, they have Burnley at home, City at home, Blades away. So, two of the bottom two teams in the table, and then Man City. And Villa have Liverpool at home, Palace away. So Liverpool, tough match. Palace playing the best football they've played in years right now. If you're Villa, you win one of those two games, you're in, undoubtedly. If Spurs loses one of those games, Villa's in. So Villa really, really have a huge advantage here. Spurs, need to beat Burnley. That's the thing. It's like Burnley need a win to have a chance.
Yeah, you're right.
Spurs absolutely need a win. So that is a huge, huge match.
Yeah, you're right. That is a huge game this weekend. Great, great take. And I, when you look at these, yeah, I mean, Villa, you kind of, the point spread is much wider than the other races we just talked about. So if you look at the fixtures and you do the whole kind of analysis we just did, what it really comes down to is Villa have 7 points, but Spurs have a match in hand. And it's just hard to make up 7 points in three games, no matter what the fixture matchup is for anyone, right? So like Spurs, you can look at their fixtures and think, okay, they're probably going to get 6 points because they play Burnley and Blades. But then that's still not enough to pass Villa, right? So they would have to hope that Villa lose both matches and they have to win all three, or Villa lose two and or lose both and then they win two and tie City, which that would be crazy for the title implication, Chris. That would actually be crazy if because that would put Villa potentially and Spurs neck and neck on points and would put Arsenal and City in neck and neck on points. A Spurs-City tie could really throw some chaos into the fourth place finish and the top end of the finish. But you got to feel like, as a Villa fan, you got to feel pretty comfortable in the position that you're in, even though you have two very difficult fixtures to end the season. And I think if you're a Villa fan, you're definitely eyeing a conference, you know, the Europa Conference League at this point, right? You're eyeing the game tomorrow against Olympiacos and have to make up a 4-2 deficit from the first leg at home, which is just a crazy, crazy game. So I think if you're a Villa fan, you're kind of eyeing that and you don't want to count your chickens, but you're feeling pretty safe at this point.
You'd think. I mean, even if Spurs beat Burnley and Blades and draw City, they got to make up 9 goals and have Villa lose twice. So
yeah.
I mean, Spurs are a team that I easily could see scoring 4 or 5 goals against Burnley or Blades, right? Like, that's not out of the question at all. But then you have to have Villa lose twice and get lucky on the goal differential if they don't win all three. So right. That would be, I mean, really, if you look at any of these races, besides maybe the title race, it would be a hell of a story if Spurs pass Villa, if Luton or Burnley manage to stay up. Those would be crazy, crazy stories. Arsenal is like a little bit less extraordinary. It's just, it would be wild because it means that Man City finally slip up in one of these like do or die matches, which right. They haven't really done under Pep. But right now, I mean, we're basically looking at a spot where I think by the time we record next week, if we record, you know, a week from today on Wednesday, the relegation in the top four like could pretty much be sealed up. And yep. we'd be looking at maybe something happening with City and Arsenal on the final day that could shake things up.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant if Burnley get a result against Spurs this weekend, because that would make the bottom end of the bottom run at the relegation run in very open and very exciting, and it would seal Villa's spot in Europe, right? So that'd be great.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then one thing I didn't really want to talk about today, just because we're already talking so much about the table, the top six race and, you know, the Europa League spots, Conference League spots, is also really interesting, but I think we'll have a clearer picture of that come next week. So I think we can just hold off there. But right now, like Newcastle, Chelsea, and United are all lurking 6 through 8 and in similar spots on points with 3 matches to play, each of them. So things can change quickly there. I think we can probably just save that conversation, especially since some of these ones we might not be talking about anymore come next Wednesday.
For sure, for sure. And that, and then the championship season has officially come to a close. So we have some intel about who's coming up. So Leicester won the title, which I think we mentioned on the pod 2 weeks ago. So they're back up, and they had a tremendous season in the championship. They're already, you know, onto their summer business. And then Ipswich were promoted, and back-to-back promotions, former Manchester United, I think, assistant Kieran McKenna, who was assistant to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as the manager there. And good to see the Tractor Boys back in the Premier League. So Ipswich are a good classic English team. So they'll be in the Premier League next season.
Some people don't know Ipswich, one of the English teams that have actually won a European Cup, Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Found that out on trivia about a month ago. That was the only one you didn't get. So the Tractor Boys, I think the best nickname, not only in English football, but maybe in all of sport.
Maybe in all of sport.
Tractor Boys.
That's a take. Yeah, there needs to be like a university mascot in the States. You know what I mean? Like I'd go to like Lehigh. Oh, what are you guys? Oh, we're the Tractor Boys.
I mean, it actually might fit if you did it like for an Iowa school.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, you did like a farm angle of it.
Yes, yes. Like Nebraska State is the Tractor Boys.
Like the coach rides in onto the football field in a John Deere.
100%. And there's a John Deere buried underneath the stadium.
Yeah, yeah, like Zupke Field. I mean, you could really see a college campus leaning into that nickname, though. They'd probably get a lot of shit from, like, opposing fan bases. But, you know, sometimes the weirder, the more fun. And England good has linemen. Some... Yeah, yeah. They're grass-fed, corn-fed. Yeah. But, you know, some England has some of the best nicknames because some of them are so old and they never change them. Right. And they don't really don't use the nicknames mean. The same... Yeah, they don't use the nicknames necessarily the same way as we do over here, where it's, like, a part of your club or your team name. But the Tractor Boys, you're gonna be hearing that a lot on NBC Sports. Is yeah. They're gonna be referring to, because it's a very fun one to say, and it'll be cool. I mean, Ipswich, I can't remember the last time they were in the Premier League. I probably should have looked that up, but you know, since I've been watching English soccer for the last, I don't know, 15 years, I can't recall them being in the Premier League. I don't think they have been, have they?
No, I don't think they've been there in a minute. I kind of remember, like, late 90s. They remind me of, like, a Portsmouth type of thing. Somewhere, like, they both play in blue. Ipswich are, like, a class blue and red and white. Or red, white, and blue, as the Americans would say. I was just thinking, Chris, Everton are the Toffees. That's another good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that is a good one. Then there's some really lame ones, like the reds and the blues.
Yeah, the classics.
Yeah, Toffees are good.
The town, the city, you know,
the citizens. Yeah, the there's citizens. There's some lame ones, but not the Tractor Boys. That's a very good one.
Yeah, so the Tractor Boys are up, and then what? The other two playoff games are going to be Leeds, Norwich, and then Southampton, West Brom. So a bunch of teams that have been they're familiar for Premier League fans, and some players, a lot of players on Premier League contracts who are going to be fighting to get back into the Prem. So those are going to be two exciting playoff semifinal games.
Yeah, I mean, Southampton sold a couple of their key pieces after last season when they went down. Leeds held on to most of their players. So if they don't go up through this playoff, you could see a bit of a fire sale there. A lot of these clubs can't afford to not go right back up and keep their squad.
Yeah, yeah. Like Norwich have definitely gone up and down, back and forth.
Yeah, Norwich and West Brom have like the recipe where it's like, okay, we go up, we buy some guys, we go down, we sell them, we go up. They know what this is like. They've been doing this for like a decade. But Leeds and Southampton, well, Leeds, you know, not like haven't really been an established Premier League club as of late, but they did spend a lot when they were up. And in Southampton, they could probably get away with maybe making another push next season in the Championship. I don't know what's going to happen with Leeds if they don't go up. So
yeah,
a lot of pressure on them. The first leg of these matches is on Sunday, the 12th, and then they'll play the second leg midweek, I think Thursday and Friday next week. And then we'll have, I don't know exactly what date the playoff final is, but it'll probably be something like May 26th or something like that, 26th.
Yeah, Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's always fun to get new teams. That's why it's, you know, Leicester coming back up, they seem like they should be back up, and they had a great season, credit to them. If we get Leeds, if we get Southampton, we've just seen them. Ipswich will be kind of like the Luton story, where first time in the Premier League for Luton. First time in Ipswich for a long, long time. Odds will be stacked against them. Back-to-back promotions. You know, Luton flew up the football table as well. So they're going to be the ones that everyone's pegging to finish at the bottom or have a really tough season. So they're going to be a fun team to watch and like a new ground for where people are going to be able to go to that they probably haven't been to for a Premier League match before. And that'll be a big, big story next season.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I do think just one last note on Leeds. I'm just thinking some of the players they've sold, right? They had to get rid of like Aronson. They got rid of Luis Sinisterra. Like, you got to think that if they don't go straight back up, I mean, they've got some really good young attackers in that team.
Crescencio Somerville was one of the players of the season for the Championship this year. I can't imagine he's going to stay there for another year.
Yeah, they still have Willie Nanto as well, right? Like, they've still got some players in that team, so. Yeah, they don't go up. I think you'll see a lot of those players leave for sure.
Yep, yep. And then moving out of out of England, we had just finished before we recorded the last Champions League semifinal. Insane match between Real Madrid and Bayern. Harry Kane officially cursed, I think it's safe to say. Bayern, it was 2-2 on aggregate coming into this. Bayern score, make it 3-2. Kane gets subbed off in the 85th. I always called him Joselu, but the commentators today on the broadcast went Joselu. Former Stoke player, former Newcastle player, basically was brought into Real Madrid this season as a depth option. Scores in the 88th after a huge mistake from Neuer, fumbled a ball, and then scores in the 90th. And then there's more controversy because Bayern score within like the last 2 minutes of the match in injury time, but the flag went up from the assistant. The whistle was blown, so the play kind of stopped. Looks like he was onside. They made the wrong call, their linesman, but they don't review it because the whistle was blown. And would you guess Real Madrid back to the Champions League final to play Dortmund, who beat PSG 1-0 and then 1-0 again in those two legs. They got pumped by PSG yesterday. Didn't matter. The XG, I think, was like 3.3-something to less than a goal. They win 1-0. Dortmund-Real Madrid Champions League final June 1st.
Yeah, if you're a Real Madrid fan, you got to be feeling pretty confident about your chances there. But that game today was bonkers. I was sitting there in the 85th minute, definitely thinking that Tuchel knows how to win the Champions League, and Bayern are going to be fine. And then they take Harry Kane off and concede very quickly. Harry Kane actually sprayed a really nice ball out for Alphonso Davies, who cut in on his right foot and scored a good goal. So it was a nice little. It was good to see Alphonso Davies getting a goal. It's nice to see like North American player playing well.
He got subbed on because of Serge Gnabry getting injured for like the 15th time this season. And you don't see Davies scoring goals with his right foot like that. It was a really, really nice shot. I think it was his first goal in the Champions League in like his 40th appearance. So that was awesome. I mean, it was a great match. The atmosphere was insane. It just feels inevitable that Real Madrid do this all the time. And right. Even with the clock ticking down a goal, I thought worst case we're going to extra time because Real Madrid just do this year after year. There's a reason why they've won more Champions Leagues than anybody else, and now they're going to be big favorites against Dortmund. I wouldn't put it past Dortmund. I mean, Dortmund have been underdogs a lot. They show up to matches like this. They don't really have any business beating Real Madrid, but you never know. It's a one match thing, so that'll be played at Wembley. And Bellingham. Former club Dortmund, now playing for Real Madrid, playing at Wembley. That's going to be a big storyline as well.
For sure. Yeah, it'll be. You think Bellingham will be nice and exhausted for the Euros this summer? So that'll be good for sure.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly.
Well, we touched on this earlier, but of course, from a managerial standpoint, we know David Moyes is out at the end of the season. That was confirmed by West Ham this week. So kind of pivoting back into England, Chris, I know the name that we've seen a lot for who's going to take over is Lopetegui, who was at Wolves, did good business last season, but then just like jettisoned the job this past summer and was replaced by Gary O'Neill when he found out that they were in sort of financial fair play restrictions. West Ham seemed to have a good financial backing. They've done quite a bit of business in years past, and even this year they've reinvested that Declan Rice money. So Lopetegui, it seems like, could be an interesting project. And if you have a West Ham fan, I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of bringing in someone who has some Premier League experience. I don't really love the way things went down with him at Wolves, leaving the way he did. It seemed you never really know exactly what conversations are happening there,
right.
But it did seem like, oh, things are gonna be pretty tough. Like you're not really gonna bring in anybody this summer that you're gonna want to try to have come in to strengthen the squad. And he basically just kind of assessed the situation, was like, yeah, I'm gonna dip. And they looked really good with Gary O'Neill this year. They got really banged up. Clearly they could have used some more players because they didn't have any depth and they faced a lot of injury trouble. But I don't know, that rubs me the wrong way a little bit. Where
you don't like that narrative, huh?
No, that's not my favorite narrative if I'm a West Ham fan and this is my new manager. But yep. I think you could do a lot worse than Lopetegui. I mean, they did have a good season with him at Wolves, and like I said, I like the idea of bringing someone who's managed in the Premier League before. So I think I think a lot of those West Ham supporters were ready to be done with the Moyes era. I think this is his fourth season, I think, at West Ham. He was out of contract. It seemed like it was the right time to end it. So I think they're probably excited. I mean, that team probably underachieved this year for the talent they had. I do think they're a mess defensively. That's where they need to really reinforce, because they have a lot of talent in the midfield. They've got a couple of solid attacking players. But defensively, they really are shaky. So curious to see what he does in the summer window if they give him the money. And I'm assuming that he has money to spend, and that's why he's likely going to take this job. It's all but confirmed right now. Everything is saying that he's going there. They've already had conversations, but it hasn't been officially announced. And I think they'll probably wait until after Moyes is done with this final game before they make any announcement official.
Yeah, I think if you're a West Ham fan, you're feeling excited about it. And I also think, like, you're right. The big kind of star on his resume is the fact that Lopetegui's got Premier League managerial experience, right? And so, if you're a West Ham fan, they like that security. Clearly, when they went with Moyes, they went with someone who's been in the Premier League before. They're not saying you're getting that level of security, but you're getting someone who's coached in the Premier League before. And then you also look at the other part of Lopetegui's resume, which is, Sevilla, Real Madrid, Spain national team manager of Porto, spent some of his, career, I think it's the beginning, spent his career at Barcelona, Real Madrid. So, like, you're not getting a chump here, right? So I think it could be a bit of a sneaky good hire, and again, is going to make that kind of, like, fourth through 10th spot that we talk a lot about on this podcast really, really difficult next season with the squad that West Ham have, because they've got a lot of good players.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the only last thing I have on that is, you asked earlier about, if Ole Glasner were to leave and Palace brings someone in from Championship or from the Premier League managers right now, like, where does Lopetegui rank compared to the other 19 or 18 or whatever managers that we know are going to be around next season in the Premier League? Like, where would you slot him in if you had him coming to a club like Palace, who, I guess, like, one of those clubs that are, like, somewhere between, like, 7th and 15th? Like, is he in the top 5 guys you'd want coming into your club? Like, the top 10?
No.
Where would you rank him?
No, certainly not. Like, when I look at, like, Premier League managers, there's, I think there's a handful that, obviously Pep's at the top. I think Arteta's up there, too. I think Ange is really strong and Unai is really strong. De Zerbi's really strong. Klopp's really strong.
This is the better question, I think, rather than going through the whole table. Would you rather have Lopetegui come in or Pochettino?
That is a good question.
Because they're both guys with pretty big resumes.
I think
higher profile guys.
I think I prefer Poch because he's done it for longer in England.
Agreed. Right? I would too. Lopetegui, I wouldn't be over the moon about it, but I would have some confidence.
Yeah, I'd be more excited getting Lopetegui at my club than I would be, like, Manchester United had to spin zone themselves for Erik ten Hag. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's a decent hire. I think if you're I think it almost, like, very similar playing to Ole Glasner, but just he has, like, experience in Europe. Ole Glasner just, like, didn't have the Premier League experience. I think it's, like, a similar level higher. And now Palace, I think, are, again, not to spin off into a Palace discussion, but I think Palace, if they're able to hold on to some of their top players, again, could make that, like, fourth through 10th spot in the table very interesting. Chelsea look like they're finding some form. Could they be, like, much better next year? Maybe. So it's going to be interesting, that part of the table, again next year, especially if Villa can secure Champions League football and then kind of, like, lock down that fourth spot, I don't know. It's going to be interesting next season.
Agreed. And then the other one, this is a little bit less official but seems like a foregone conclusion. We've talked about it a little bit, so we don't need to dwell too much on him specifically, but it does seem like Ten Hag will be out after the season. Everything is pointing towards that. After his FA Cup match, I think that'll be the end of it. I think we both agree that that's the right move.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything positive to say about him. I have seen him linked with Bayern, which is interesting. And I've seen Tuchel linked with United. So that would be a bit of a crazy swap,
yeah,
but it does seem like the favorite. And I don't know if this is just because he's a big name and the Euros are coming up, but it a lot of chatter about Gareth Southgate to Manchester United, because he already has announced that the Euros will be his last competition as the England manager. What do you think that would look like, bringing in Gareth Southgate?
Super interesting. I don't really, I need to know more about like why Southgate has already announced that. Like, I don't know if it's like he doesn't want to manage for a while. Is it that he wants a club job? Like, the whole idea about being an international manager is like, it's pretty chill, right? Like, it is far more relaxing. And, I mean, you got far less fixtures on the calendar. And so it's a little bit more of like a football ambassador, like it's more of an ambassadorial role, where, you know, you've got to have scouts all over the country. You've got to know, you know, you make sure you have a good, you know, under 17s and under 20s, and you have good infrastructure and coaches coming up through your system. And, you know, you're at St. George's Park and playing at Wembley. Like, it's much more of like a national identity kind of ambassador role than it is like these head coaches who spend, you know, 9 to 10 months a year with their teams and are on the on the pitch with them every single week, right? Like, so I think that I just don't really know why he's already announced that. Is it that he doesn't want to manage at all? So I can't, that's my thing, is like when I see that he's linked with the United job, I can't see that if he's, my assumption is if he's announcing that he doesn't want to be manager of England anymore, then he's kind of sick of the pressure and the constant media attention and da-da-da-da-da. Those are things you're going to get even more so at Manchester United. So, like, well, it seems like all, like, I don't really know why he's resigning, I guess is my point.
So I think the one thing I wanted to add on that about, like, so you mentioned that the being an international manager is more chill. I agree. It's a little more cushy because the schedule, right? Like, you're not managing week in, week out. You're not training every day with these players. So in terms of like your schedule and your lifestyle, it's probably a little bit less busy. However, you have a lot less control, right? You're just dealing with the pool of players that are eligible for your country. And you're mentioning like, well, you're going to get a lot of criticism if you're the manager of Manchester United, definitely. But you have, if you're the manager of England, you don't have the just the Manchester United supporters that are critiquing every move you make. You have literally everybody in the country, right? Fans of every club are looking at Gareth Southgate and criticizing every move he makes. And he doesn't really have a whole lot of control over his team, right? He can choose like the 23rd guy to make the squad, and some people are going to be like, oh, it should have been this guy or that guy. A lot of the times those players don't really make a difference in the end of the day in a competition. But you're getting all the eyeballs on you in these big competitions. And at the end of the day, you're kind of dealing with, you're playing with the cards that are dealt to you, right?
Yeah, but that's what any head coach of any club team is doing, right? They're not like signings.
You're going to have some influence in that,
for sure. And they have some influence. They have a similar level of influence as the national manager, right? They just pick. Yeah. They pick the roster. I feel
yeah,
you.
So you pick 23 out of the 26 or 27 guys that are like realistic options, right? It's not like you're not finding some gem player. You're not, you know, like starting a guy who's 18 in the Euros. Like, you have a little bit of, I mean, you obviously have a lot of say in who goes into that squad, but you don't have a say in who's English or who's eligible for your country. And I think I would get a little bit bored. I think I'd be a little bit stale after a while when you, like, all things considered, Gareth Southgate's had a ton of success as the England manager. They've been very, very good. They've made it far in pretty much every competition they've been in. And he's constantly criticized for not being an aggressive coach tactically. They don't score a lot of goals. Every time there's a call-up, you know, fans of all these clubs are complaining about why their guy didn't get there. I think it's probably a pretty stressful position to be in. And at the end of the day, I think if you really believe in your abilities as a manager and, like, someone who could build up a squad and win trophies, you're going to have a lot more to play with being a manager at Manchester United than you are the coach of England. So if I were him, I get it. Like, I get the appeal of trying to take a club job, and I get the idea of being like, you know what, I've had my run as the English manager. Like, I don't want to do this forever. Let's let someone else take over. This is what happens with every country. Like, none of these guys stay there for 15, 20 years. Like, they all kind of cycle through, and guys will be like a little bit drained. So, hey, you know what, I've been at Barcelona and Bayern and whatever, I'm going to take the Spain national job, coach a World Cup, see if we can win that, and then I'll probably go back into the club mix again. Like, this happens all the time. the difference with Southgate is he doesn't really have the experience of managing a club, like a big club, prior to going to England. So, like, why not test it if you're him, right? If you really believe in it, like, kind of prove some of the doubters wrong and build something a little bit more long-term. So I get it. I mean, who knows if that'll happen? Who knows if he's a good manager, the right guy for the job? That's the thing, right? If you're going to take a job like Manchester United without the experience of running the helm at a club like that, I think it's a really risky appointment if they make it.
Yeah, for sure. I honestly don't think that they will, just because of his CV doesn't lend itself to that. And again, I just wonder, you know, I wonder what his motivations are for announcing his retirement. If it's what you're saying, that like he thinks it's like a capped position, and you know he's kind of sick of the limitations he has on the role and his perception that he's actually done a good job, then like I guess my point is like I think you're going to have very similar frustrations at a role at Manchester United, you know. So
yeah. I think the one thing that announcing it right now does for him is it keeps the decision in his hands. Like if England get bounced early at the Euros, they might have gotten rid of him anyway. But by making the announcement prior, he can say, like, this was my decision, regardless of the outcome of the event. If he wins, awesome. You know, he can leave. He could probably come back if he wants to, if he wins, because they'll be like, this guy's a hero. But he probably still will leave. But if he loses in, like, the quarters, and there's a difficult decision for the FA to make or whatever, right, regarding his future, he's just like, no, I already said this, like, I'm out, it's my decision, I don't need, and then so like that way it's not as much of a ding on his resume rather than getting sacked after a bad Euros.
Yeah, it is a defensive move for sure, for his long-term kind of stock. But I just think, I don't know, Chris, if you, I'm like looking at like the Premier League players who could make the Euros, like there are so many guys who have played so many minutes in the Premier League this season who like are good players who won't make the Euro team. So like,
no,
I just don't think it's realistically like, so you know, saying earlier that like the pool of players is, you know, you have this infinite possibilities,
it's more fixed. Influence. It's fixed though.
Sure it is, but like it's a big ass fixed pool that you're swimming in. Like it is, there's so many good players who won't even make the Euro team. Like, is Anthony Gordon going to make the Euro team? Is Eze going to make the Euro team? Right? These are players who are averaging really high ratings. Will Conor Gallagher make the team? Will Jared Bowen? Yeah. Will James Tarkowski? Will Ross Barkley?
Really will matter. Solanke? It's just like Jordan Henderson's going to make the team based off of reputation. So much of these call-ups are just reputation-based and not ability-based. Right. And I think, I mean, I disagree with a lot of decisions that he makes, but I think his hand is forced in a lot of them too. Like, you're not just going to bring in, you're not going to like be like Adam Wharton and Kobe Mainoo. Like, I don't necessarily think either of those guys should be in the squad, but Adam Wharton, like, objectively has had a much better season, I think, than Kobe Mainoo, and is probably someone who would be better suited to be called up. But neither of those guys are going to play a minute, you would think. Like,
yeah, so, they won't.
But Southgate's going to be in the paper every day until the call-ups, right? Like, till the squad's announced. And he's going to have to get all this criticism, all these people in his ear about who to take. And in reality, like, it's like Declan Rice is going to be starting in that position. So, I don't know. I just think it would be, like, a really tiresome job with all these people. Like I said, it's, you know, it's not the Manchester United supporters that are criticizing you. It's literally the supporters of every club in England are criticizing every decision you make. Like, the amount of, like, discussion and detail that goes into, like, every player and, like, oh, my favorite player at my club deserves it. Like, it would just get exhausting.
Yeah, that's fair. I was just looking at, like, top-rated English players on who scored, and Alfie Doughty is pretty high up there, Chris. You think he makes the squad?
Right. We need a left back. They don't have a left back.
Alfie Doughty. Can you imagine if he made the team? There would be uproar. All right. Well, from a management perspective, I think, you know, again, we'll know a lot more next week as teams' fates are sealed. From an FPL standpoint, Chris, we've got 2 weeks left in the season. This upcoming week is the last double game week of the season. So game week 37, there are a bunch of teams playing playing twice. Manchester City being one that we mentioned earlier, who's playing twice. Spurs also a double. So a bunch of big assets. And so you'll see a lot of chips played this week until we go into the penultimate 38th game week. And so I think the only thing to be cognizant of is teams that are, you know, whether like rotating somebody, the last thing you want for the last week of the season, or you want to have players in your team that are playing for something. So just be cognizant of that to our FBL players out there. That's my one word of caution.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You ready to do some trivia?
Yes. So I've got a pretty short trivia for you, Chris. And I think it ties into some of the discussion we've had about the championship on this pod. So I'm going to give you a minute, but I'm looking for the top there are five players who have scored more than 16 goals in the championship this season. And so I'm looking for the top five goal scorers from the championship. I'm going to give you a minute to go. Ready, set, go.
Okay. I know one is Adam Armstrong, right?
He's number two with 21 goals. Well done.
Okay. He's had a really good season. I'm going to say Crescencio Somerville.
He's tied for third with 19. You've got two.
Okay. Now it gets tougher. I haven't watched like any championship games this season. I've been following the table, but I don't really know who's been playing a ton for some of these teams. I'm going to say Jamie Vardy.
Yep, he's got 18. He's in fifth.
Wow, that's crazy that he's even playing that much. He's got to be like 35. Okay, now it gets really dire. I don't think there's any other players from any of those clubs.
You got 25 seconds left.
Okay. I really haven't followed the championship enough to know. I mean, I would think that there's going to be someone from one of like the top eight here. Like, I don't know about Ipswich, but like a West Brom, Norwich, Middlesbrough.
All right, that's
probably one of those players, but yeah, I'm just going to call it.
Yeah, that's time. So those are the three that I expected you to get. So I am impressed. Well done. You got the three that you should have gotten and that, you know, you needed to get. So well done. So the number one goal scorer in the championship this season, I don't know how we would talk about this, but more, he's got 27 goals in the championship this season. And he's not even like an out and out number nine. It's Sammy Smodzic from Blackburn Rovers. And I don't know if you know, say his name. I always thought it was Smodzic, but if you say it's, look at his name, it's S-Z-M-O-D-I-C-S. So I'm sorry, Sammy. I think he's a Hungarian, or his family's Hungarian. I think he's – so I think
– but he's born like, in Colchester, and he's an Ireland international. Interesting. I'm looking at it now. I just pulled up, like, the top scorers.
I'm, like, totally going off the dome and, like, what I can picture for his Football Manager profile. But I think it's Smodzic. I don't know if it's Smodzic or Smodzic. I always thought it was Smodzic. But
probably Hungarian, yeah. That would be my guess, Smodzic.
So, Sammy, I'm sorry I don't know that. So he's first. He's got 27 goals. That's six more than Adam Armstrong in the championship, Chris.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, 28 years old, too. I don't know what his future looks like. Right. But, I mean, 27 goals, 44 appearances, only four assists. But,
right.
Wow.
Yep, he's played in 44. I was going to say.
Would have never guessed.
Yeah, he's played in 44 games. So Adam Armstrong's played in 46. So like Adam Armstrong has, you know, played in more games and six less goals on a better team. So very interesting. And then in third, and this is pretty sick, I think, this is Morgan Whittaker from Plymouth, who was the top goal scorer in League One the previous season for Plymouth Argyle, who just stayed up and relegated Birmingham City to go down to League One. So the Blue Nose are down. So I know a lot of Villa fans are pumped about that. So he's got 19 goals. So the top five was Sammy Smodzic at 27 goals. I've said his name like nine different ways now. Adam Armstrong at 21 goals. Crescencio Somerville, Morgan Whittaker on 19, and Jamie Vardy on 18. You then have four different players on 16 goals. So that's Haji Wright, American from Coventry. Mm-hmm. Che Adams, another Southampton player. So they had two players over 15 goals, two strikers. Josh Sargent, American from Norwich. So you got two Americans repping there. And then you got Emmanuel Latelethe, from Middlesbrough has 16.
Okay.
And then so you actually
don't, some of those guys I could have got. Like I could have easily guessed like Sargent, Adams. Like those guys are you know, players I'm very familiar with, but they weren't in the top five, so I'm not upset I didn't guess them. But yeah, I mean, I would have never in a million years gotten Smodzic or Whitaker, so I'm happy with 3 out of 5 there.
Yeah, crazy. Pretty impressive stuff. All right, well, let's look ahead to the fixtures for this upcoming weekend, Chris. Let's start. We talked about some of these fixtures already, like how we're excited for them, so let's actually pick the score. Let's start with West Ham in Luton. West Ham have a part to play, the David Moyes narrative. What do you think?
This is a tough one. That's why I put it on here, because there's a lot of good games on Saturday. I did one from Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We normally only do three. We're going to do four this week. Neither of these teams are playing well. Both winless in their last four. Both conceding a lot of goals. Luton, obviously, like them more at Kenilworth than I do them playing away. I think there's probably goals in this game from both teams. I don't know if Luton have what it takes. So I'm going to say 2-2, which, you know, doesn't necessarily kill Luton, but not what they need, really.
All right. Interesting. 2-2. So I'm going to say Luton win because I'm down on West Ham. And the narrative, I'm not buying it, Chris. I'm learning from my Klopp mistakes. I think Luton
in the last 40 minutes here.
Yeah, I think Luton win 2-1.
Okay. Next one we have is on Sunday, Manchester United against Arsenal. We talked about this match a little bit, but we didn't really give a prediction. I know we both like Arsenal here, but what do you like for a score?
Yeah, it's going to get ugly. United are down bad. They don't have enough healthy defenders. They got pumped by Crystal Palace. I like, we'll call it 4-0 Arsenal victory.
I don't hate that. But I kind of think that – I think Arsenal will take care of business. I kind of think that they might – I don't know. They haven't really shown that they could win big matches over the last couple of seasons. They're still a young team. Like, they're obviously really, really good, right? All around a very, very solid team. They've been great defensively all season. But I think that sometimes the moment gets a little bit big for them. So I think this one might be a little bit nervier. But I'll say 3-1, and I just think that it's not a blowout from start to finish. I think that United kind of hang in there for a bit in like a really ugly fashion, and then Arsenal get a couple goals in the second half and win 3-1.
All right. How about Liverpool-Villa?
Yes, this is on Monday. I don't really love how either of these teams are playing coming into this match either. Villa 2-2 draw against Chelsea, 1-0 loss against Brighton, where they played really, really poorly. They have some injuries. They're going to be playing a really good squad, or you know, on their end tomorrow against Olympiacos. They should have a little bit of rest. It's Thursday to a Monday, so it's not like quite back to back. But I'm a little nervous about Villa in this one. I do think I'm going to go with Liverpool to win 2-1.
Yeah, I'm honestly like I feel bad, but I do think Liverpool are going to win. I can see. The only way they don't is if Villa catch Darwin offside like 40 times, which has a decent chance of happening. It's also at Liverpool, and I think it's Liverpool's last home game of the season, right? So you're going to have the whole Klopp mania. So I'm going to say Liverpool. Did you say 2-1 against Villa?
I did.
Yeah, I think that's a really good pick.
So just to let you know, this game is at Villa.
Oh, it's at Villa.
I mixed it up on there. It's at Villa.
Oh, okay. That changes things.
Their last
okay.
match is home against Wolves.
In that case, 3-0 Villa. No, I'm just playing. I'll do 1-1.
Okay. 1-1. Yeah, I mixed up the order on there. So it is at Villa Park. Our final one we have here, this is one we talked about as well, as a big run-in match. Spurs at home against City on Tuesday. I'll let you go first here.
Yeah, this one's madness. Spurs just aren't playing well, and City are really going to have them, under their spur. I think City win this one 3-1.
That's such a bad joke. I also think this one. So you like we're mentioning the Arsenal United could get ugly. I think this one could get ugly. It's weird. Ange has kind of lost the team a little bit down the stretch of the season. He's yelling a lot. He was like all jovial and smiley and happy for the first couple of months of the season when things were going well. And now, like, Madison's getting benched. He's yelling at players when they concede. He's starting to show a lot more anger on the sideline. They're going to need a win in this one, so I don't think they're going to, like, show up completely flat. But I do like City to win this. I'll say 4-1. I think they're going to start pouring in goals. Holland's starting to kick on again. I like City to win very comfortably in that.
Interesting. All right. So what's your score?
I said 4-1.
4-1. Sorry, you slipped me by. I was focusing on the comfortable and picturing Ange like yelling at different players. Are you seeing that on the touchline right now?
He was yelling a lot in their last match, yeah.
Ooh. Not good. He's got that like
aggression. I think he yelled, stop. I think they caught it at one point. He said, stop fucking passing it backwards.
Eesh.
Yeah. Which, you know, he doesn't like. I mean, he's probably told him that a million times in training. Right. Don't pass backwards.
Right. That's, yeah. And that's a genius coaching technique, right? Like, don't pass the ball backwards and see if you win. Decent.
I mean, decent. It creates a lot of goals. I mean, say what you want about Spurs and Ange, but they are fun to watch. There's a lot of crazy stuff that goes down in those matches.
Yeah. Well, I think City. Yeah, I think we both think City are going to pull that one out, and that'll be good for Villa's quest for Champions League football. So, yeah. Yeah, I think that tees up nicely, Chris. We've got Aston Villa tomorrow playing in the second leg of the Europa Conference League. So tune into that, Villa fans. I know we will. And Chris, that's all I've got this week on the pod. How about you? You got anything else?
No. But we'll be back next week, and we'll talk about the lead up to the final day. Should be some drama. We're hoping for drama.
Yeah, and we've got our inaugural awards, so Premier League Player of the Season, all that stuff. We'll give it out JGTS fashion. But as always, gang, thanks for listening. Just goes to show.
Everybody's human. Thanks, guys.